Thank you, Peter, and I'm very pleased to be here today to speak to such a large and illustrious group. A lot of what I'm going to, some of what I'm going to say today, reiterates points I've made in the past, and for those who have heard them before, I'm sorry for that, but I think the points I'm going to make still need to be made, still pertinent, and still relevant to the debate we're having. But there, as Peter was suggesting, there have been a lot of new developments, and I'll certainly be covering those for the most part of what I'm going to say. I'm going to try and constrain myself to 20 minutes or so, and I hope that we can have some discussion about any of what I'm going to say and what the other speakers say later on. Not so long ago, a lot of doom and gloom permeated the infrastructure debate in Australia. The doom and gloom echoed some alarming and more long-standing claims made about infrastructure crisis in the energy sector. For example, a media release in October 2001 by the Australian Pipeline Industry Association stated that the current regulatory quagmire is suffocating new pipeline development and requires urgent policy attention by governments. However, in May last year, reports prepared by two different governments, one state Labor government and the other Commonwealth Coalition government, effectively countered the doom and gloom. Both reports reached the same conclusion. There is no, and never has been, an infrastructure crisis in Australia. There is no infrastructure crisis in Australia was in fact the very first sentence of the Victorian report. And it went on to say that the quality of the nation's infrastructure has helped underpin Australia's strong economic performance over the last decade and provides us with an advantage in competing for footloose investment projects in the region. This would not have come as any surprise to international observers after a recent OECD economic survey of Australia singled out national competition policy reforms as playing a central role in Australia's economic success story and declared that in the last decade of the 20th century, Australia became a model for other OECD countries. What the OECD was saying was that the opening up of Australia's state-controlled infrastructure under NCP, far from retarding our growth, actually lifted our GDP beyond its long-term growth path. Our own Productivity Commission estimates this growth at around 2.5% of GDP. Now, with the hysterics about an infrastructure crisis safely tucked away, today I want to highlight some of the a few key areas in energy, the real issues in infrastructure regulation reform, and what can be done to improve them. Investment in energy infrastructure since the implementation of NCP has been remarkably high. Capital expenditure in new gas pipelines has increased substantially, including the construction of those pipelines I've listed there. I'm not going to go through them. You can read them for yourself. There are some suggestions that the Eastern Gas Pipeline was built despite the National Gas Code rather than because of it. Let me tell you, I was around talking to people at that time, and that construction of that pipeline depended heavily on getting access to the AGL distribution system in Sydney. In addition, two new pipelines currently under advanced stages of planning and development are those two listed there. The proposed PNG pipeline, with an expected capacity of around 200 petajoules a year, will be one of the largest pipelines that Australia has seen in recent times. On completion, it is likely to satisfy most of the additional demand for gas and probably result in there being no need for any new major pipeline developments to service the Eastern Australian gas markets for some considerable time into the future. Since responsibility for transmission regulation in the national electricity market became progressively transferred to the ACCC in 1999, our decisions have accommodated over $4.5 billion in transmission investment. Most recently, the ACCC paved the way for $1.4 billion in new investment in electricity transmission in New South Wales and the ACT alone over the next 5 years, with its final revenue cap decisions for Transgrid and Energy Australia. As the Allenet Consulting Group concluded in its report to the ACCC on the impact of regulation on investment, in summary, there is no evidence to suggest that Australia's regulatory framework is deterring investment in regulated utilities. To the contrary, the regulated utilities sector has relatively strong investment fundamentals, whether compared to the Australian market or internationally. Ratings agencies have been just as positive about the prospects of regulated companies over the next 3 to 5 years. Moody's noted the positive regulatory frameworks and stable operating and financial profiles, while Standard & Poor's noted the transparent and supportive regulatory regime. Similarly, Fitch Ratings stated that the current regulatory regime appears relatively supportive for transmission entities. While it's clear that Australia does not have an infrastructure crisis, there are regulatory arrangements and practices in certain sectors which can be improved to promote investment in essential national infrastructure. As the Prime Minister's Economic Infrastructure Task Force concluded, the greatest impediment to the development of infrastructure necessary for Australia to realise its export potential is the way in which the current economic regulatory framework is structured and administered. It is adversarial, cumbersome, complicated, time-consuming, inefficient, and subject to gaming by participants. There are too many regulators, and regulatory issues are slowing down investment in infrastructure used by export industries. Other than that, I think they thought it was okay. This is where, in my opinion, and the opinion of the ACCC, we get to the nub of the problem. Everyone wants quick decisions by regulators, but not everyone is happy to accept the umpire's verdict. And thus, many projects get mired in judicial challenge, appeals, court verdicts, and tribunals. In addition to the adversarial, cumbersome, complicated, time-consuming, and inefficient process, there are a plethora of regulators. In the ACCC's submission to the task force, we pointed out that while the competition policy reforms of the mid-1990s were intended to establish a national approach to competition issues across jurisdictions and markets, the reality is that there has been a proliferation of different regimes at the state and territory level. The Australian Energy Regulator was designed as a one-stop shop for energy regulation. But it should be noted that as of right now, the AER is simply an additional regulator on top of the 9 state and territory bodies. It's important, therefore, that the transfer of regulatory functions to the AER take place as planned. I note that the proposed Australian Energy Market Agreement will be amended in the near future to facilitate this transfer. So it's clear that much more can be done to speed up the process of regulation in Australia by clearing away the multiple layers of regulation and multiple levels of appeal. Turning now to the AEMC Chapter 6 review. There are a number of other reviews grappling with the question of what changes to regulatory arrangements and what further energy sector reforms should be undertaken to improve these outcomes. For example, 2 weeks ago, the Australian Energy Market Commission released its draft rule proposal for Chapter 6 of the National Electricity Rules. These rules outline the framework for revenue regulation of electricity transmission companies in the NEM. I don't propose to address the specifics of the AEMC's proposals in this forum in detail. AER staff are considering the implications of the rule change proposal, and a submission will be forwarded to the AEMC in due course. In fact, it's up before the AER meeting tomorrow. However, everyone would acknowledge that the proposed rules involve some fundamental changes to the way transmission networks are regulated. The proposed rules require the AER to accept expenditure proposals, new capital expenditure proposals, if satisfied that they are a reasonable estimate of the service provider's requirements. We are considering what implications this has for our ability to respond to proposals that are given to us. The proposals also introduce a reopener provision to compensate transmission companies when they overspend against their allowances. And again, we're assessing how such an arrangement would work under an incentive-based regime designed to reward efficient investment and efficient investment only. Finally, as the AEMC acknowledges, the rule proposal is more detailed than the current rules. It replaces the 10 pages devoted in the current rules to setting revenues for transmission companies with 100 pages. It codifies the form of regulation and the methodology for determining revenues, including by codifying the weighted average cost of capital. Most of the changes draw on the extensive work of the ACCC in developing its statement of regulatory principles. While this may be an endorsement of approaches to date in some ways by the ACCC and other regulators, in other ways, it may be that the incentive regime implemented to date has been seriously distorted. Turning now to recent work of COAG. If you followed energy debates recently, you could be excused for thinking that the only issue that we face revolves around how to improve regulation of energy markets. However, there are reviews that are looking at broader and indeed arguably more important issues than the regulation of gas and electricity infrastructure. The latest Council of Australian Governments communique undertakes a stocktake of energy reforms and commits to further reform. As highlighted by the Ministerial Council on Energy, significant benefits have arisen as a result of the opening up of energy markets, including considerable integration of the wholesale electricity markets in Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, the ACT and South Australia, substantial investment in new electricity generation and gas production, and in particular in electricity and gas transmission interconnection between states in eastern and southeastern Australia, vigorous electricity retail competition in the medium and large business sector, and accelerating competition in newly opened household and small business markets, and high levels of supply security and improvements in network reliability. Despite these significant achievements, the reform process is far from complete. In some areas of the NEM, generator market power remains a problem. In addition, the level of coordination of transmission planning between jurisdictions is generally weak. Finally, the participation of the demand side in the market is generally minimal, with retail contestability underdeveloped in some NEM jurisdictions. It is interesting to consider that the two key elements of the latest COAG communique. It's interesting to note the two key elements of COAG's communique. The first element is the COAG's recommitment to the MCE reforms underway. One of the key reforms is the commitment to transfer distribution regulation to the AER. This has the potential to chip away at the multiple layers of regulation that currently encountered by businesses. COAG has also reaffirmed its commitment to phase out energy price regulation where effective competition can be demonstrated. The second element, however, touches on some of the outstanding reform issues noted above. COAG has established an energy reform implementation group which will report before the end of 2006 with proposals for, firstly, achieving a fully national transmission grid, including the most suitable governance and transitional arrangements having regard to COAG's objective of achieving a truly national approach to the future development of electricity grid, the legitimate commercial interests of asset owners, and the need to promote investment that supports the efficient provision of transmission services. Second, any measures that may be necessary to address structural issues affecting the ongoing competitiveness and efficiency of the electricity sector. And lastly, any measures that may be necessary to ensuring that there are transparent and effective financial markets to support energy markets. These reviews address some of the key issues in the NEM, such as market structure and transmission planning. While it's not clear what the result of these reviews will be, a refocusing on the key energy market reforms is a positive step. While on the issue of market structure, another key development is COAG's commitment to develop recommendations under National Electricity Law to maintain the separation of generation and transmission activities to complement the existing competitive conduct provisions in the Trade Practices Act. The ACCC has always argued that it is imperative to maintain vertical separation of generation and transmission. We've always considered that a vertically integrated transmission generation company has a strong incentive to discriminate in favour of its own operations against non-integrated generation competitors. Further, the ACCC has advocated a policy response to this critical market structure issue and therefore supports COAG's initiatives in this regard. To conclude and looking forward, as I said at the outset, Australia does not have an infrastructure crisis. Indeed, levels of investment in electricity and gas transmission infrastructure have been unprecedented. So we need to move on from this debate to instead continue to look for ways to improve regulatory arrangements and practices to promote investment in essential national infrastructure. We also need to focus on further structural reform measures, such as those recently noted by COAG, because of these reforms that have the potential to deliver significant gains for consumers, business and the economy as a whole. Thank you.